T-Y.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Now, right now.
Now's the time to do the right thing.
Yes, yes, we have to have peace, but we have to have peace all over the world. That is part of our problem here, but I believe you cannot have peace without justice. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we are live here at Black Radio Hall of Fame at the historically black campus of Harris Stowe State University. The opinions expressed on BRHF are those of the program hosted, not necessarily those of Harris Stowe or Black Radio Hall of Fame. So this is the place. This is the voices on the battlefield that are out there. And we have two guests who, you know, I just have to give them big props for being able to be in Jefferson City, where our state legislators are, because you really do have to have a certain mentality, a certain spirit, a certain enamor to be in that space. So welcome today, Kay Mills and Nisha Smith. Hello there.
Hi. Hi, Tamara.
So Kay is with Missouri Jobs with Justice, and I think we've had a couple of folks on from JWJ, but it sounds like that's all they deal with is jobs. But, you know, when you're talking about workers' struggles, you got to talk about all the things that affect workers and their families. So that's why it's important for us to know who these people are that are fighting on our behalf. Nisha is with Empower Missouri. And they have been working mainly around housing, but still, again, all of these issues are interconnected. And I know Empower Missouri, some people might know them from another name. Actually, you know, since 1901, they've had three name changes, but each time it's been to really reflect the deepening of their understanding of their mission. So some of you, as I did, start to know them as MASW, Missouri Association for Social Welfare, but they are now Empower Missouri. So here we go, you all. This is an update on what's happening legislatively, and I have to remind people that, you know, this is, I sort of see what's going on in Jeff City as a game of whack-a-mole, because every time we get an issue and we think we got it resolved or moving along, it comes back up again to bite us on the butt. And we have a triple threat there with the Republican Party, the GOP, because they control the House, the Senate, and the governor's seat. So that doesn't mean that we can't do anything. Let's not get disillusioned. That does not mean that. That means we have to be more organized and more strategic. So we're going to divide up the conversation into some issue areas to help us go through this. And sometimes they don't fit nicely and neatly in any of those, but healthcare and housing, worker struggles, and anti-democratic bills, that's the basic issues that I have lined out. So I'm going to start with healthcare because that affects everybody. What's on the horizon, and this is for either Kay or Nisha, that we need to be watching, that you all have been watching, that, you know, our listeners need to know about? And also at the end, we want to be able to tell them, what do you need to do about this? Who do you need to contact, where it is in the process of becoming a bill or not, so that we give folks some assignments. So what do we need? What's being watched in healthcare?
you say this is what you want to start with?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at the specific bill because that's not an area I focus on a lot, but I do, I mean, I know some of the things coming up is trying to expand services for pregnant women, expanding Medicaid, which we did, but just trying to keep that at the forefront. Also working to have dual services recognized and covered by insurances and Medicaid, because it has been shown that that extra support actually increases birth outcomes and decreases mortality, which we know is a big problem, especially among Black pregnant people. We know that the mortality rates are incredibly high, and so there's been a lot of people really fighting for that. And then they're also working on expanding coverage to cover like cochlear implants, hearing aids, and things like that. And the thing that's interesting is a lot of this, it seems like common sense. Like, hey, these are great. Let's cover them. This improves people's lives, keeps them healthier. But it just seems like we're constantly having to fight to get a lot of our legislators to realize that these are actually cost effective, because we have to speak their language. It's cost effective as well. You know, when people have coverage, you know, it's going, it's actually going to be long-term cost-effective.
And Misha, we're talking about HB 1918 and HB 2626 that is going to require Medicaid to provide coverage for those hearing aids. And I'm really surprised that this is an issue, because a bunch of those folks up there are old and can't hear. So, you know, I'm also getting more experience with this because my mom is wearing a hearing aid. My aunt wore one before she passed last year. So I'm checking out how expensive these hearing aids are. And some of it for me is just preying on senior citizens in terms of, okay, you got to have this, so we're going to mark these things up. So it's going to be helpful for Medicaid to provide at least some of the coverage of those hearing aids.
Yeah, and I just saw that SB 1212, which is a bill that modifies provisions relating to hospital price transparency laws, actually passed out of committee today, and it would, let me see, basically it's protecting the patient that if they get a surprise bill, the hospital cannot pursue correction actions against them, and that hospitals have to be in compliance with being very transparent about their pricing, because we all know we've had times we've had something done, we cleared it with our insurance if we have it, we think everything's good, and then we get this huge surprise bill, and we're like, we have no idea how we're going to pay this, and then they start collections and judgments and everything against people, which... that's a whole other thing, the fact that people can have to go bankrupt over getting medical care. So, I was just going to say this was actually introduced by Republicans. So, that's good.
So, and that's the thing about being strategic. Sometimes you got to work with folks who are open across the aisle to make sure that we are working in behalf of all the families in Missouri. So I just want to explain to the people who may not know, when we say SB and the number and HB, that is House Bill, and that's a bill that's going through the House. The SB is Senate bill, and that's going through the Senate. And so, they don't mix and mingle until at the very end when they get together and figure out what things they're going to compromise on. For you, Kay, is anything that you're working on related to the health field?
So a bill that we're watching, though, there are several bills that, would do the same thing, but it's, a bill on ambulance birth control. So it would, allow insurance companies or require insurance companies to cover an annual supply of birth control rather than like the monthly or quarterly supply that they cover now. And the interesting thing about this policy is that it was introduced in both chambers by a Republican and a Democrat in each chamber. So a bill in the House, HB 2190, has been passed through committee. It was made into a bigger bill and added in with some other healthcare reforms, but it is on the House floor, or not on the House floor, but on the calendar for debate in the House now.
Okay. So the health... Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say also, it's not a legislative issue, but we're also watching the unwinding of Medicaid. That's the process of renewing Medicaid after the renewal process was paused during the pandemic. And it's been really problematic here in Missouri. There have been a lot of procedural terminations, you know, where someone didn't send in the right form or had moved and didn't get the form and have lost coverage.
Yeah, I've been writing about that just to let people know, if you haven't, don't pay attention, this is what's happening. You may be off the rolls if you didn't, you know, even if you think you are. So what is the procedure? What do people need to know to make sure that they still are on those rolls?
There was a letter that was sent out by Medicaid, by DSS, and folks were supposed to respond to that letter, and then there was, a determination if they were still eligible. Mm-hmm. So it's not working the way it should be, though. The call center has, incredibly long wait times if you try to call in and ask questions. Lots of kids are being kicked off in Missouri, even though the eligibility rate, for Medicaid for children is very high in Missouri. So the rate of children being kicked off doesn't make sense. We believe that procedural terminations should stop for now while we try to figure out what's going on.
Misha, you want to jump in? Because I can't see you all, so I have to jump in.
We also are advocating for annual supply of birth control because, of course, it's absolutely just, it's easier, and we love absolutely that it's bipartisan. And the Medicaid thing, I was just going to say, absolutely, before I, dove into policy work, I was a case manager, and we were experiencing this constantly, and it was just really telling clients, try to make sure all of your information is up to date. But I know there were stories that came out around the time we had to have the lawsuit to get them to recognize when we passed, we voted for Medicaid expansion, that then they were putting up all these roadblocks where it was taking way too long, way more than it should have, to get people enrolled who newly applied or who newly qualified, keeping people on. It kind of just became this big mess that almost felt intentional.
Right.
Like, fine, we have to do it, but we don't have to do it well. And it's definitely been a lot harder than it should have. And, people need health insurance.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah. Especially now.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, absolutely.
So you reminded me that... when we think we're living in a democracy where the majority rules or the majority has some amount of influence, and we look at voters saying, yes, they want Medicaid expansion, or yes, they want local control of St. Louis Police Department, yet the legislature comes along and either changes that or tries to present new legislation that nullifies it, or, as you said, just makes it harder. Now, I can understand the police department wanting to not be under local control and getting their buddies in Jeff City to go along with that. But I'm thinking about Medicaid expansion. some of their constituents are recipients. So why are you going to harm your own folks? And so I just, that part of it is just, you know, just baffles me. But at the same time, the whole notion of local control, the whole notion of democracy, a majority rules, seems to be really under attack in this day and age. And I know a lot of that has to do with our former president, who's making sure that he becomes the authoritarian figure here in this country, but we are not going to let that happen. If you're just joining us, we are talking about what's going on under the dome, and that's Jeff City, where our state legislature makes all the laws that impact us and our families and our future. And we have Kay Mills with Missouri Jobs for Justice and Nisha Smith with Empower Missouri. These are two folks who watch these bills and really help inform the social justice ecosystem, because I know the Organization for Black Struggle doesn't have the ability to have a dedicated staff to this. So we rely on your two organizations to help us follow, okay, what's going on, particularly if it's not something that we normally would follow, because, again, a number of these bills are interrelated as it relates to how are we going to create quality of life for the citizens of Missouri. And so a number of these bills either help do that or really neutralize us being able to do that. What else is going on as it relates to housing? Anything going on there?
Oh, so much. yeah, and this is definitely my area. So this morning, SB 1336, which is the homeless criminalization bill, had a hearing, and we had people from our coalition, people from housing providers, community partners, staff member down there testifying. So SB 1336 is a bill. Senate Bill 1336, what it does is it seeks to basically criminalize poverty. If someone is camping or staying on state-owned land, which can be public streets, public sidewalks, parks, underpasses, anything that is deemed not private property, and like a law enforcement officer comes to them and says, you have to leave and go to a shelter, but there are no shelters because we are very, very, very short supply of shelters. Then if they come back the second time and say, you have to leave, you have to go to a shelter, they could be charged with a misdemeanor, given like a fine of $500 and or jail time. And one of the things we know is people that are living in poverty, people who are homeless, the court system is not set up for them to navigate it well. And so a citation becomes a warrant. And the other aspect of this that we're really also focusing on is they want to divert money away from the construction of new permanent supportive housing and put it into short-term options, street outreach, to do mental health and substance use services, shelters, and parts of the bill even mention like state funded encampments where they would just be like big tent cities and put everyone there. And it's problematic. And the thing that's interesting is a bill SB or HB 1606 was passed in, went into law in 2022, and lawsuits were immediately filed. This is the exact same language. It had the criminalization and the diverting funds away from permanent supportive housing. And what it did, when it went to court, the Missouri Supreme Court is like, oh, wait,
Missouri law states that bills have to adhere to a single subject requirement, which means that whatever the main bill's subject is, any amendments or language added to it have to fall under that umbrella. And the addition of the homeless criminalization language had nothing to do with the main bill, so they threw it out on those grounds. And Senator Holly Thompson Rader out of District 27 filed an identical bill, and they had the hearing today. So we are really fighting that. Mm-hmm. Another bill we're fighting that has passed the House and is now awaiting a second reading in the Senate and then get assigned to committee, it's HB 2385. And this one is very problematic because what it wants to do is take away local control from local governments to pass source of income discrimination bans. And the main focus of these bans is saying that, like, landlords and property managers, they can deny someone tenancy solely based on the fact that they have a voucher that helps pay their rent. And the other problem with this, like the local control aspect, is Columbia, Missouri, Kansas City, Missouri, St. Louis City, and Webster Grove, their own local communities voted on and passed source of income discrimination bans in their community. If this passes, the state comes in and says, no more. We preempt that. We take it away. They don't exist anymore. And so it goes back to the thing that we were talking about, that people in communities choose what's best for them. And the state's going to come in and say, you can't have that anymore. And it will also, for people who receive a voucher, the hardest part is finding somewhere to live, now. We have, like, in 2023, the shortage of affordable homes in Missouri for extremely low-income Missourians, and that's people who have income that's like 0 to 30% of area median income. There is a shortage of like 114,000 affordable units. The newest 2024 report just came out, and it has jumped to a little over 120. For every 42 low-income renters, or for every 100 low-income renters, there's only 32 units available for them.
Hmm.
And these bills are just increasing that between them, saying, oh, you can't build any more permanent supportive housing, which is housing geared towards those with the highest needs, disability, mental health issues, substance use, or they have a child who may have a disability who have also been homeless. This gets them into stable housing so that they can then start focusing on all these other things they have to do. And it's evidence-based. All the data shows that this is one of the most solid ways to end homelessness, and they want to pull money from it. And, you know, and then they're already losing so many landlords and so many affordable units that passing a bill that would allow that discrimination to go even further is a problem. And the other issue is Missouri is the only state in the country out of compliance with the Fair Housing Act.
Surprise,
which means, yeah, and we actually, it actually cost us like $500,000 a year, for being out of compliance. But the thing is, these discrimination bans, also are looking at the underlying reasons that landlords are refusing to rent to someone. They will use race, but they won't say it's race. They will say, we don't like your source of income. Social Security disability, gig workers, which became huge during the pandemic. And so they can really use these laws, if they're passed, to discriminate further while hiding behind these laws as, well, I don't have to, this is law, when we know that many times there's a whole other reason that's part of the systemic issues that we also face.
And so is House Bill 2385 part of that as well?
Yes.
Okay.
2385 is the source of income discrimination ban.
Mm-hmm.
And SB 1336 is the homeless criminalization and diversion of permanent supportive housing funding.
Okay. Wow.
And I mean, we do have a couple of land banks bills where we could expand counties in Missouri being able to have land banks, mm-hmm. which is one way to increase housing supply. Mm-hmm. And those are doing pretty well. And but a bill that we've been trying to get even a hearing for years would increase funding to our housing trust fund, because we're the fourth lowest housing trust fund, funded trust fund in the country. And that money goes towards agencies that help prevent homelessness, that provide rental assistance, that do updates and modifications on housing. We barely have enough money. Last year, they received $10.4 million in requests, and they were able to award $3.7 million. Hmm. And the funding mechanism for that hasn't increased since 1994. And I don't know. Like, I remember 1994, and prices have changed a bit since then. So
you think? Yeah.
Yeah. So we will be doing a big summer campaign around that. We need a Republican sponsor. And also just helping people know what it is and get the message out so they can advocate.
And I know the housing issue, it is comprehensive and it is complex. I watch what's going on in Los Angeles, because they have a huge problem, much worse than St. Louis or even Kansas City. And I just, you know, it's just a very complex thing, because you have folks with mental health issues who sometimes don't want permanent housing. And so, you know, how do you deal with that? And so I know that some of the bills that you know, people like Empower Missouri is presenting to the legislature are really stopgap, you know, to help what's going on right now, and to keep what's going on right now, that if it's positive, keep it going. So we are not under any illusion that any of these bills are a pathway to the end of, you know, unhoused and homelessness. So,
right.
Yeah. You all have anything going on with that, Kay, with housing?
The only other bill that I would mention, and I'm sure you're going to know more about this one, but Senate Bill 895, which is one of the preemption bills that would remove would stop local policy, remove the ability for localities to impose an eviction moratorium during natural disaster or public health emergencies.
You said it would prevent them from doing it?
Yeah, prevent them,
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is Machiavellian. That's totally Machiavellian. Wow.
Yeah, and thank you for mentioning those, Kay. I have my list in front of me, but it's like there's so many. But, it's just interesting. And I know our executive director a couple of weeks ago did one of our weekly perspectives on local control versus preemption. And it really seems like we see so much with the legislators that in some areas they fight so hard for local control, and then in other areas they fight so hard to take away local control. And it's like, which side? I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then of course the initiative petition bans, which could undermine all of this work. The eviction moratorium bans, it's another case of the state saying, sorry, local governments, you don't get to choose for yourself. They're going to choose for you. And they say it's
to create uniformity, but our counties aren't uniform.
Never
They're
have been.
Very different. And every area is going to have, you know, they're going to know the differences they need. So yeah, it's a fun session down in Jeff City.
Like I said at the top of the hour, you know, my hat's off to you all that have to sit there and endure some of this foolishness, because to me, a lot of it is just totally irrational. And I know it's based on race and class, but really, some of it just gets to be so obvious. So you talked about the initiative ballot, and I know, you know, the Organization for Black Struggle and JWJ and a number of other groups have been really following this, because when we cannot get satisfaction from our lawmakers, that is the tool that we've been using and using quite successfully. Exactly. And so now they're trying to take that away from us. So either one of you can explain what exactly is the initiative ballot and how have we been using it?
The power of people is greater than the people in power, and that's why the initiative petition process is so important. Because we're able to make change in our community that way, and that's also why it's under attack, just like you said, Jamala. I've worked on initiative petitions since 2006. I gathered signatures on an initiative petition that year to raise the minimum wage, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was maybe from $5.25 to $6.50. But since then, hundreds of thousands of Missourians have gotten raises through the initiative petition process, and the last 5 years, each January, minimum wage workers have gotten an 85-cent raise. Often that's the only raise they get that year. And that's because we passed an increase in minimum wage to $12 back in 2018. That same year, we stopped the so-called right to work in Missouri through the initiative petition process. Mm-hmm. And in 2020, like we talked about earlier, we expanded access to healthcare through Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. And that was after 10 years of inaction by the Missouri legislature.
Yeah, exactly.
10 years for them to expand Medicaid, and people in our state are dying without access to health care. So we collected signatures through the initiative petition process to take it to the ballot and to let the voters decide.
And they did in a very robust way. I mean, it was very clear. It was like, oh, this is like a thin margin. No, they came out strong in support of all
exactly.
the ballot initiatives. Yeah.
But that's why we see this under attack. You know, we see wins like that when our legislators don't take action. But then, you know, some of the politicians in our state capital are still losers, and they want to, like, hold their power and take power away from us. So the last 6 legislative session, we've seen all sorts of bills and all sorts of ways to get rid of our right to direct democracy. And each year, it's like a different way to do the math to stop us from winning. This year's proposal, I know you alluded to, would end majority rule, but it's just another example of them trying to rig the rules and change how we've done things for 119 years in this state.
Yeah.
Trying to destroy the values of direct democracy and trick voters into supporting it. Even, like, the words that they're using are designed to trick voters. They say a majority of a majority. But what that really means is that a minority of Missourians could block progress that a majority supports.
Senate Joint Resolution 74, is that
yeah.
part of this whole thing of making voting harder for us to do as citizens?
Yeah, so Senate Joint Resolution 74, that's a bill that was advanced through the Senate mid-February, I think. It just was heard in the House Elections Committee yesterday, so that bill would end majority rule. There's another bill that's on the House calendar, HJR 86, that would also end majority rule. You know, they both change a long-standing tradition of one person and one vote.
I want people to understand really what's happening here. This is the consolidation of power in the hands of a few. And
yeah.
mainly the majority, even though we express not just verbally, but on our way to the ballot box, what we want, that continues to be ignored, and not just ignored, but reversed. And so this is time for people to just wake up and look at what's happening, and that's one of the reasons that we are having the show today, because there are a number of bills that are going through both the House and the Senate on the state level that are detrimental to our well-being. And the ones that we have said this will help ease some of the pain of capitalism, they're the ones that are being attacked. So we have to keep a eagle eye on this, and that's why people like Misha and Kay are so important in this process. What about the whole thing that we were working on last week, Kay, with trying to deal with even criminalizing protest? And we've been Absolutely. Working on these bills for 3 or 4 years that will that they've tried to make any assembly of people, you know, protesting in any kind of way a criminal activity, including having felony charges. The latest round, let's talk about that, because I think we were getting testimonies up until midnight. I think my last one was 11:45 p.m. So this is like work for us, you know, to respond to this stuff. So what was happening with that particular piece of legislation?
Yeah, so that is House Bill 2218. It's sponsored by Representative Herman Morse from down in Dexter, Missouri, down in the Boot Heel. And, you know, that bill would allow civil lawsuits against any organizer or sponsor of a protest that results in property damage or personal injury. But there is no requirement that the organizer or sponsor have any role in causing the damage or injury, or even any intent or reason to know that that damage or injury might have occurred during the protest in order to be liable.
So I want people to have a visual of this, Kay. So, for example, if the Organization for Black Struggle in Power, Missouri, mm-hmm. and Missouri Jobs for Justice decide to put on a demonstration, and we had some crazy folks who decided they wanted to throw chairs through the glass windows of downtown, we as the sponsors are going to be accountable for that and liable for that. That's what this bill does. So you don't even have to know the folks who did the damage. You're going to be responsible. So that's just crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's part of that national trend that we've seen since 2017. We've seen, we've been fighting it in Missouri since then. There have been bills every session, and bills in all 50 states that, you know, just anti-protest bills in response to social movements. Mm-hmm. I think it started, Standing Rock and Black Lives Matter protests.
Mm-hmm.
They're aimed at silencing communities of color. You can look at this legislation, they'll say, critical infrastructure, and what they're referring to is pipeline protesters,
mm-hmm.
And referencing indigenous communities. When they talk about protesting on highways, they're referencing Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, some of the bills that we've fought in Missouri for the last few years have been terrible, too.
Oh yeah, and we've been successful in beating those back. I had some organizers from Florida last year, and we talked a little bit about that bill because we were actually talking about some other issues, but they had to admit it has had a chilling effect on demonstrations in Florida, because that bill was signed by the governor, I think maybe 3 years ago, and they've seen the impact. So the ability for us, and I always say this in an ironic way, they are creating situations that are unbearable that we have to respond to, but yet the ability to respond and express our discontent is being muffled. So wait a minute. We're supposed to suffer silently with all this craziness? No, we are not. So those are just some of the things that I think people need to be aware of that we take for granted. I mean, we think it's a constitutional right to assemble. It is a human right. That's part of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that you have the right to assemble. So here's the legislature. Several state legislatures that are putting a damper on that, and that's just part of, I think, a core value of having a democracy, or else we'll be end up like, you know, some of these other countries where, you know, you'll be jailed and next thing you know snatched up and people don't hear from you again. So yeah, this is serious business, y'all. What else we got that's coming up or that you all have been watching?
Initially petitions or any topic? And you can go ahead, Kay.
I was just going to mention that we're watching a bill that would cut the weeks of unemployment in Missouri. So Senate Bill 745 is sponsored by Senator Bernstetter from Jefferson City. We've seen this bill come up every legislative session since 2015. It would tie unemployment benefits with the unemployment rate in Missouri, and could lower Missouri's number of weeks of unemployment to as low as 8, which would be the lowest in the nation. Right now we have 20 weeks, which is still lower than the national average, which is 26. And this bill is on the calendar in the Senate. It was actually amended to be even a little bit worse. So now it includes counting any severance or termination pay against your weekly unemployment amount. So not only would the weeks of unemployment be less, but the amount each week would be less. Mm. And, you know, we're concerned about it because, number one, it's our safety net program, and it's there to help us in hard times. But it also ignores the real reality facing Missouri workers. You know, there are workers in the building and construction trades industry who are impacted by weather. There are, you know, workers like an auto plant who are impacted by, like, supply chain or demand slowdown. And it also ignores the fact that, you know, again, like we were talking earlier, like counties and municipalities are not the same across the state. So the state unemployment rate is not the same in each county. And, you know, back in 2023, when this bill, a similar bill was on the calendar, the Missouri Budget Project released a report. And at that time, 50 of Missouri's 114 counties had unemployment rates that were above the state average. Mm. And the majority of those counties with the higher unemployment rates were in rural areas of Missouri, especially high in the Boot Heel and southern Missouri.
Wow. So I'm glad you mentioned the safety net piece of it, because both the federal government and state government have really been backing off of their responsibility to increase and strengthen the safety net. And more people are needing that safety net as the economy does its, you know, up and downs, and as some of these draconian bills are introduced and passed. And yet it's organizations like ours that are trying to maintain some level of not just decency, but a standard of life, of quality of life. And so I just want people to understand that if folks like Kay and Misha were not down there, I just hesitate to see what these folks would be doing. But they do need some reminders. They need a morality check. They need a financial check. But they need some mirror held up to them as to what they really are doing to the state. Now, one of the bills that I was a little perturbed about, because every time I hear the word illegal alien, it feels like somebody's scratching a blackboard, and I know a lot of young folks don't know what a blackboard is, but that chalk up against the blackboard, it's like, okay, so HB, you know, 2367, and there's a couple of other ones that are making it illegal to trespass. And I'm thinking, really? How are you all going to enforce that? So what's up with that bill?
What's the bill number, Jamal?
It's 2367, 2470, yeah, and 2523. And this is, you all actually testified in opposition to it, which would create a new offense of trespass by a so-called illegal alien. So here's the thing, and I'm just going to have you do this, Misha, because there's sometimes laws already on the books that will address something.
Right.
And these folks then come around and put another one as if we didn't know that it was already illegal. So what's up with those three bills?
Well,
HB 2523, that is, as of yesterday, it is on the formal perfection calendar in the House, which means that it could pass the House any time. And so this says that a person commits the offense of trespass by, I hate this word, illegal alien, yeah, that if they're 18 years or older and they can commit any act that qualifies as a Class C misdemeanor or higher on public or private land in Missouri, and they have not been issued an alien registration card or not a temporary resident or temporary visitor, or they fail to register, they would make it a Class C felony. And then the other bill, let me pull that one up. I love Fast Democracy. The one that creates the offense of trespass by someone who is undocumented is HB 2367. And there hasn't really been any action on that since February 20th. It passed out of committee. But, yeah, the other one, the 2523, is making movement. And I do believe we testified on that.
Yeah, we did.
Because I remember it because when we were doing a write-up for the newsletter, the comps team came back and went, illegal alien? And we're like, we're not using that term ourselves. We put it in brackets because that's the language in the bill. And it was, we were like, we hate that. So we put it in brackets. But yeah, those, it's just, they're fighting this issue that isn't exactly what they think. But yeah, it's, It appeals to certain bases, I guess, and, you know, election year legislation also gets very interesting, you know?
It is so 2024. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we're seeing a lot of that.
Yeah.
And then I know you guys were talking about safety net programs, and we're still, our food security policy manager has been gathering support and people to sign on to get our governor to do the final signing that we will do summer EBT, which provides during the summer to eligible families with children an extra $40 per child, because we know during the summer hunger is a big issue. Mm. And there are resources, but they're not accessible to everyone. They can't reach everyone. And some states are not signing on to this, which seems incredibly cruel.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then also advocating for the restaurant meals program, where EBT benefits for some populations, like people who are homeless, for example, could use their EBT to buy hot food because they have no way to cook food.
So
they're trying to pass that. And then, yeah, but those are like, seems like common sense safety nets.
How about, common sense, Misha, how about humane?
Right.
Humane.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. And I believe when we're talking about the summer EBT is, it actually would have an economic benefit to us. The data I have in front of me says we could expect an economic impact of $92 million to $664 million. Like, it would benefit us. And we still don't even know if they've done the final sign-on from the last I've heard.
And we know from what happened during COVID when the schools were closed, that kids are hungry they're hungry at home, and if they are not at school where they at least get that breakfast and maybe an after school snack, that we have to fill those gaps, those voids. And I don't know what it is about summer. I guess it's because the kids are more active. They eat more. So it just seems to me that the folks who know this or the folks who are watching kids, looking at kids who have kids in their program, that this would be a no-brainer.
Yeah, especially since it actually provides an economic benefit to us. So hopefully they do the right thing and go ahead and sign on to it.
So in these last few minutes, I really want you all to talk about how you operate under the dome, and you know, how do you interact with legislators, particularly ones that are presenting or introducing very hostile bills to Missourians. What is, and then how do you all work together as, you know, legislative folks who are watching stuff and collaborating? What's the process for that?
You want to go, Kay?
Sure, yeah. For Jobs with Justice, we believe in grassroots action. We think that's the key to protecting democracy and getting wins for working people. So, like, for example, with these attacks on the initiative petition process, we've been coming together, you know, over the last several years, but again this year from around the state, and we've spoken out against these attacks on democracy. There was a hearing on, you know, one of the first bills that would have ended majority, or that would end majority rule back in January in the House Elections Committee. And over 400 people submitted testimony against that bill, and a little handful of, you know, folks or organizations supported it. We had a lobby day in late January with over 200 people from around the state coming together to speak out against the trickery that would end our long-standing practice of majority rule. There was a hearing in a House committee that day on another one of these bills. There's like 20 of these bills. There's been a lot of hearings. Mm-hmm. But at that hearing, over 100 Missourians were, you know, a few were inside the committee hearing rooms, they're small, but the rest of us were packed outside the hearing room waiting to get in for a chance to testify. And then yesterday, this SJR 74 that was heard in committee in the House, over 725 Missourians submitted testimony, either, you know, written or in person, against ending majority rule. So, you know, our goal under the dome is to let legislators know that these things aren't things that Missourians are asking for. We oppose it. We don't want to give away our rights to direct democracy. We don't want to make it harder for our votes to count.
What about you, Misha?
Well, also, in the housing space at Empower, my coworker, V. Sanchez, and I are really going into the local communities. We has a tenant union in Springfield called STUN, Springfield Tenants Union, and a group of them just finished a year-long housing justice fellowship where they did training and preparation to become the tenant leaders in their communities and really get involved in, like, city council, local policy. And I'm in the very beginning stages of starting one in most likely Columbia, Missouri, because we know that the state policies are important, but sometimes at the local level, you're dealing with something that's impacting you that you're not really paying attention to the state. And we want people to know that they can impact change at the local level. And then at the state level, it's really, we try to come at it also from an educational stance where, what do we know about the senator or the representative? What language do we need to use to help them understand how this bill would be harmful or would be beneficial? And we just try to set up the conversations, and we also do a lot. I know V and I, within our Affordable Housing Coalition, we've been doing a lot of training and talking about advocacy and, you know, offering support for people to get involved. We do calls to action so that people can email their legislators without feeling overwhelmed. Because before I ever went to Jeff City, it just seemed like this big, huge thing. And my first time there, once I told some other people navigating it, I was like, oh, okay, I belong here. This is my house.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's another thing that we have to remind people is we voted them in. Mm-hmm. We, our taxes pay for that. That is our house. And not put legislators like on pedestals, but to remember our own power. And that's something we're really working hard to capture and promote among people involved with us. We have our week of action coming up, the 25th through the 28th, and we have our day of action on the 27th at the Capitol, where we will have hundreds of advocates come with us and receive training, receive information, meet legislators, be provided their talking points, all of that. So we're really excited.
And I've talked about the lobby days that the different groups have and encourage listeners to take up on that, because it will give you a lot of insight in what's going on in Jefferson City, but also the process of influencing a bill.
Right.
And during those trainings, folks get to know how do you meet with your legislator? And a lot of us go there not even knowing who our legislator is. So it's a very informative and I think empowering, experience to participate in a lobby day and be with people who are advocating. That to me is the only excitement that you would have down there at that place. But, you know, because everybody's like enthusiastic about what they believe in and the bill that they're going to be pursuing. And you sometimes it's on the bus, and so you get to talk about all the stuff going and coming. And I'd like for you all to talk about, your website and information about how to connect with you all once you leave this show.
Yeah, so our website is all one word, empowermissouri.org, and you can go on there and you can see what events we have coming up. We have Friday forums, we have our coalition meetings. We have an area where you can look at our policy priority areas, and you can see how to get involved with those, whether it's a coalition or just receiving the newsletter updates. We have our legislative trackers that are broken down by each area that we're following, and you can subscribe to those to get emails. And if you want to connect with me to learn anything else, I love a good email. My email is my first name, Misha, M-I-S-H-A, at empowermissouri.org.
Okay. What about you, Kay? How do you reach Missouri Jobs with Justice? Did we lose Kay? I think we did, but I will just say that almost ditto what Misha said. If you go to the website for Missouri Jobs with Justice, you can find out what's going on, what they're getting ready to do. They also have a e-news that you can subscribe to and get those updates. You know, Missouri Jobs with Justice or Missouri J with J, is what you will, what you'll hear, what you'll see. So I'm sorry that we missed out on her, but, I was going to say that after the session, I really would like for you all to, come back. I've had, you know, Missouri Rural Crisis Center come on and talk about what's going on legislative with them. Missouri Justice Coalition, Michelle Smith, come talk about her things. So, yeah, we got to stay on top of this. So thank you, Kay, for joining us. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we will see you on the battlefield. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Jamala. I look forward to speaking with you when session's over. Bye.
Procrastinate.